We're back in our study. Last time we kind of spent a little bit of time going over some biblical aspects of this as we were out there at the other church because of the renovations, and we spent some time with that. But I wanted to get back into really some of the reasons for this crisis. We dealt with this crisis of safety in our day today. We based on a research study, and we were talking about the different untruths that have been promoted to our society today, to the kids in our culture, that the untruth that everything is, you are a fragile person, that you need to be protected from everything. The untruth of fragility, the untruth of emotional reasoning, that you start with how you feel about something, and then from there you kind of make your own conclusions. And we dealt a lot with this intent versus impact. And I keep bringing that up because that's the way our society is today. That's the way our news media is today, especially when they start talking about politics and all these other issues that are so prominent today. And it's not what somebody meant. You know, maybe somebody said something and had no idea what that meant, and they really didn't mean for you to take it that way. And then all of a sudden, since you didn't like that person and you didn't like the way they said it, it impacted you. So you reason from an emotional standpoint without viewing the facts, and you reason to the fact that, well, they were aggressive against me, and so I therefore have the right to be aggressive against them. We looked at all the college riots on college campuses in recent years, and all the disinvites of the speakers and all those kind of things that we discussed. And then we also talked about the untruth of us versus them, the victims and the oppressors. And the society today seems to want to divide everybody into those two categories. You're either a victim or you're an oppressor. We looked at that big kind of mapping there that we found in that research study where they just show the distinctions between people. Remember, at the very top of that map was the heterosexual white male. They're the top of the food chain of the oppressors, just terrible, terrible people. And then down on the bottom were the homosexual women, lesbian type things, and they're the most oppressed. So this is the kind of things that they're teaching young people. This is what they're promoting in colleges. These are what the research studies are being based upon. And we began to look at last time we were here, a few things about why this is happening. What are some, again, this is based on a study that two liberal college professors did. These guys aren't even professing believers, but they see the problems with young people growing up and being so entitled, being victims, being what they call the snowflake generation, needing safe spaces, all those things that we discussed. And I was telling Mrs. Smits before that I got some new chairs in my office finally for people to come in and meet with me and chew me out and things. You know, that's the way it goes. But I told Mrs. Smits that these are real comfortable, and you and I can sit here and just eat some cookies, and we've got our own little safe space in my office that I can hide out in now. So we're set for the school year. But anyway, enough about that. That's what kids are growing up to think today. And they're taught to look to be a victim, to find victimization, so that then they feel justified to act aggressively, physically aggressive, and whatever else you want to put there. They're just acting and doing ridiculous things, you know, dumping water on police officers, for example. I mean, that's just the height of terribleness to me, disrespect for authority. They just think that those police officers, who, by the way, are some of the most underpaid people in our country, who are not doing this for the money, and you're going to go out there and treat them like that because they're oppressors and we're the victims. This is why this is happening. This is the mindset that they're growing up to have in our country. Well, what are some other reasons? There are many things we could look at. There's polarization in American politics. That's a big part of it. And it seems like news media is left and right. It doesn't matter. They kind of feed that polarization. There's also a division that's fostered in the news media. There's other things as well that we could look at. But I wanted to just focus on a few reasons. We'll try to get to three of them today of why some of these things are happening. Of course, these reasons are purely from a secular standpoint. Now, we know as Christians, the actual reasons that these things are happening is because our society has rejected God. Our society has rejected the scriptures. We threw it out of the public schools. We've attempted to throw God as the creator out of the public schools, out of young people's education. And so we as Christians know the actual reasons why these things are happening. But from a secular standpoint, there are some interesting facts and interesting things to think about as to why this is being cultivated as well. One thing is the rise of depression and anxiety in young people. I don't know if you've thought about that much, but it seems that more and more these young people are living in states of depression, living in states of anxiety, and we're more and more, as the years go on, having to deal with parents and students that even come into our school that, well, he's been in a high anxiety format and he's on medication for that. or they're in a high state of depression, and they're in some therapies for those kind of things. And there's a big emphasis on this kind of depression and anxiety. And where does that come from? Where does that come from? We're going to deal with a few things here. And in order to do that, I want to go back and talk about the iGen. Remember way back at the beginning of the summer when we started, we talked about the iGeneration. It's the generation typically probably after the millennials, maybe overlapping a little bit. And these are those that grew up with the internet. Ever since they were born, they've known what an iPhone is. I left mine on my view there. And they've known what an iPhone or a tablet or whatever. They've had access to all those things since they grew up. I've told you this before, you know, this older people, and I'm not even as old as, you know, some of you, which maybe I'm getting myself in trouble, right, Mr. Woods? I was proud of Mr. Woods. He had his smartphone out last night at Gators and was just rolled right through that thing, pulled up a picture and showed it to me. Man, he was just cutting edge. Cutting edge. I loved it. It was great. But anyway, remember, I was telling the teachers even this week, remember the old days, at least in my mind, I'm getting old. I'll be 40 in January. Maybe that's not old. I don't know. It sure does feel like it. But I remember back in 1994, 95, and my dad went down to People's Computers. It's not there anymore, but it was at Crossroads Plaza in Cary. I don't know if you know where that is, but my dad goes over there and we got this computer. I'm talking, we had to get an 18-wheeler to haul the thing home, just about, you know, big old desktop, big old monitor and stuff. Well, we were so excited, we didn't even know what it did. We didn't even know why Dad bought it. We didn't even know what the internet was. What's the internet? Dad's like, man, we can get on the internet with this. What's that? You know, and we got on, we clicked on Netscape, and we waited. And waited. And kept on waiting. And, you know, finally it comes up and we're like, what do we do with it? I don't know, but we're on the internet, man. This is pretty cool, you know. So this the old days there when internet was one-sided. And I've talked about this before. The difference between social media and regular internet is the interaction levels. With the internet, old school, they call it internet 1.0. The traditional internet is you're the one going on, like if you're Googling something, or you're the one going, when you go on the internet and you're looking for something, or you're maybe shopping for something, you're actively doing things on the keyboard. You're bringing things up. There's not much interaction from the other side. That's Internet 1.0. Social media is what they call Internet 2.0, the newest, the redone version, the revision, so to speak, where I'm interacting with things and they're interacting back with me. That's the difference there. I can get on Instagram and I can post a picture and then the people like the picture or comment on the picture. Same thing with Facebook or Snapchat or whatever you're using, or Twitter. I can post this comment and then other people post. It's interactive. And that's the difference. And when that started coming around, social media really became large in 2007. I mean, it has started earlier. And you think about Facebook was one of the first, was the first social media platform. And it was designed for college students. I don't know if you've known the history of Facebook or looked at that at all. But only, you could only be on Facebook if you had, were in a college. If you were in a college as a student, you were able to get on. And it was made for an interaction between students to help each other out with classes and tutoring and all kinds of other things. Pretty good purpose that they did there, to meet friends in college and find people with similar interests. It was geared for a social network while you're in college to find people that can help you, or maybe people with similar likes and dislikes as you, and you can make a group of friends. That was the whole purpose of Facebook. But of course, things began to develop, and then back in, let's see, 2006 or so, they removed that requirement, 2006, 2007, somewhere in there, and now anybody could basically join. Maybe they dropped it to, like, you know, a 13-year-old could go on and join. A 5-year-old could go on and join. There was no longer this requirement, and of course they took it away because people were just going on and lying about it. Are you a college student? Yes. Okay, there's a 10-year-old that just clicked yes. Are you 18 or older? Yes. I mean, people were just outright lying about it, so they were like, what's the point? Just get rid of it. And so Facebook began to really take off, and then other things happened. From, you know, 2007 to about 2012, there was a huge proliferation. You had Facebook, of course. Then you have Twitter. That was 2006. Tumblr, 2007. Instagram, 2010. Snapchat, 2011. There's Twitter as well, or Twitter was one of the first ones, and that was really a key way for people to post their thoughts and ideas. And these are all, I mean, there's nothing wrong with these things. Now, some of them I don't really care for. But there's nothing wrong with using a means of communication. You know, it's hard. Sometimes I have to explain to parents that just because your son or daughter doesn't have cell phone service doesn't mean they can communicate. And it's kind of hard to understand that sometimes. You can give anybody any device. You can give them a tablet. You can give them a iPod that doesn't have service. You can give them even a laptop that has a camera on it. And from that device with Wi-Fi, you can call anybody, you can text anybody, you can video call anybody. You almost don't even need cell phone service. You know that when I travel to South America, I traveled again this year, was there for a couple weeks. I did not even do an international plan on my phone. Now they charge like in crazy amounts for that stuff. I didn't do it because just about everywhere I went down there had Wi-Fi. I was able to call Megan anytime I wanted. I was able to text Megan anytime I wanted right through the Wi-Fi on my phone. You don't even need it. So it's a totally different change, and it's kind of hard. I had some parents one time, they were like, I don't understand my son. How in the world is he talking to this girl at school? I mean, he doesn't have a cell phone service. And I said, well, does he have an iPod? Yeah. Well, that's how he's doing it. And they just couldn't believe it. But I mean, you can do all of that from a device. And of course, they're practical. They're good. Seth has a little an iPhone that doesn't have any service. And when I need to call him, I can call him if he's home with the Wi-Fi. I can call him and say, hey, you know, do this or do that and give him orders. That's all I do is call him when I need something. So, you know, I don't ever call him and say, hey, buddy, how you doing? Like, hey, do this. Bye. So that's what kids are for, right? You know, just to be the slaves and order them around, right, Mr. Pegory? Yes, okay, I thought so. So I'm on the right track there. So even Jared with his little tablet, I can call Jared on Facebook Messenger. He doesn't even have a Facebook account, but he has a Messenger. And I can call him and just be like, hey, Jared, we need to do this. So there's very convenient things to do that. But the problem is, a lot of times we're letting younger children have this unsupervised. And parents are unaware of all the things that can go on there. But we're going to get to why these things are somewhat we got to be cautious with. I want to read an interview. This interview happened in 2017 with Sean Parker. Sean Parker was the first president of Facebook. First president, 2017. Oh, I didn't move my slide to social media, change of social relationships. We'll get to that in a minute. Here's what he said in his interview. The thought process that went into building these applications, Facebook being the first, was all about this. How do we consume as much of your time and conscious attention as possible? That was their goal from the beginning. How do we consume your time? And that means that we need to sort of give you a little dopamine hit. Every once in a while, that feeling, it's a hormone type thing. It's kind of why people do drugs, to get that hit, that dopamine hit. You get that hit every once in a while because someone liked or commented on a photo or a post or whatever. And that's going to get you to contribute more content, and that's going to get you more likes and comments. It's a social validation feedback loop. Social validation feedback. Exactly, he said exactly the thing a hacker like myself would come up with, because you're exploiting a vulnerability in human psychology. Even he saw that, and they exploited it for money, of course. They're one of the most wealthy groups, and they went public, I think, a couple years ago, trading-wise. Anyway, earlier in the interview, he actually said this, God only knows what it's doing to our children's brains. But that didn't stop him, of course. That didn't stop him. They're exploiting, they're making the money. They don't care what it does to you or what it does to your brain. So with young people, I got to have that dopamine hit. I got to have that like. I've got to get out there and put my Instagram picture, and I've got to get as many likes, double tap, click on that. The heart little thing comes up. I don't even know how all that stuff works much, but it got to come up. Oh, how many does so-and-so have versus how many do I have? And this is where, now it may sound crazy, this is where some of this depression and anxiety is coming from. These kids, I got to have that feeling. I got to have that hit. And oh, so-and-so over there is, and they like their picture, and I must be ugly. And so they go introverted into themselves. Because we've just, here kids, whatever, leave me alone. And this is what's going to happen in these type of situations. So social media here, how it came in, safety basically is needed from depression and anxiety. So this is what they're teaching. Your depression and anxiety, we got to have safety from it. We got to try to thwart depression and anxiety. So maybe the social media can help do that, and it's actually made it worse. There's a lady named Jean Twinge. I actually bought her book. I haven't started reading it yet. I'm really excited once things slow down a little bit to start reading that. But she wrote a book. I'm going to read the title of the book, and I bought it. I'm very excited to read it. Why Today's Super Connected Kids. Now, they're super connected. You'd think that'd be a good thing and would help them. Why today's super connected kids are growing up, now listen, less rebellious. You think, well, that might be a good thing. True, but they're learning to be just vegetables. I would have maybe put that growing up without guts. They're growing up to be softies is basically what that means. More tolerant and less happy and completely unprepared for adulthood. That's the title of her book. Oh, they're super connected. Oh, they're more tolerant. That's wonderful. But they're unhappy. They're depressed. And they're going through anxiety and all these things that the secular world continues to promote. And so she did a ton of research and, you know, statistics and all these things showing. She said, for example, members of I generation wait longer to do certain things like, let me read it, for example, having a job. Here's another thing. Driving a car. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, you may think I'm crazy. My dad was a painter in Raleigh, so we painted a ton of houses up there. And he still is painting up there in Wake Forest. But my dad, he got a Ranger. I'll never forget the first day he drove home with that Ranger. I was so excited. I love Rangers. I still have one. It was a 1994. It was green, and it was stick shift. I thought it was the coolest thing ever. I didn't even know what stick shift meant. And so I used to ride with my dad and watch him. I'm 13 years old, 13, 14 years old. And he explained to me how he would shift that. And when my dad, I couldn't wait for my dad to get home from work. You know why? Because I would go out into the driveway and sit in his truck, not running. It wasn't even running. Didn't have the key in it, but I would sit in the truck and I'd put the clutch in and I'd put it in first. I'd pretend I was driving, put the clutch in, move it to second. And I had it all in my mind of going down the roads and going, I was crazy. Maybe somebody walked by and said, what is this idiot doing in that truck? I was shifting gears and I was having a ball. I couldn't wait to drive. I'm telling you, it was the greatest thing in my life when I went down there and got my permit. And it was the worst day of my parents' life because I learned how to drive like Raleigh people drive, and that's not good. Two freight trains of 90 going down the belt line, and you get mowed over or move out of the way in the rush hour in the morning. Remember those days in the paint van. A lot of fun. I just loved driving that. And my mom had an old Aerostar van. Actually, it was a new Aerostar van. Aerostar, one of the ugliest, most hideous vans in the world, but it would fly. And I haven't told my mom this. So mom, if you get on and listen, I'm sorry. The day I got my license, I loved it. Took the van, passed perfectly. I was so excited. I just loved driving. Mom said, I need you to run this to Mrs. Lanier's house. Yes, ma'am. Buddy, I jumped in that van. I'll never forget going down 421 between Dunn and Sampson County, and I was going 90 straight down 421. I was having a ball. Mom, I never told you that, so I'm sorry. It was great. I loved to drive. I couldn't wait to drive. It was awesome. And we drove all over. Of course, living there, everything was an hour away and driving all around Raleigh and stuff. And you learn how to drive pretty aggressively and safely at the same time, if that's such a thing. But kids today don't care. You notice that? And that's what she points out. She said in her study, she's finding out they're waiting later to have a job. Whatever. Who cares? Mommy and Daddy will take care of me. They're waiting later to drive. Now, there's some good things they're waiting for. It's like drinking alcohol. They're actually waiting later to drink alcohol. Good things, shouldn't even be doing it anyway, but going out on a date. They don't even care. They're still 10-year-olds in 18-year-old bodies. And she's finding this research. She says, members of iGen wait longer to do these things than members of the previous generation. Instead of engaging in these activities that involve face-to-face interactions. And that's the key. Face-to-face interactions. I'd rather be sitting in my bedroom with the door closed and the lights off, staring at an idiotic screen and melting my brain. Me, 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 me. And it all gets pumped in here. And then we wonder why they're depressed and why they have high anxiety. This is what's happening today in our culture. Teens are spending much more time alone interacting with screens. And the combination of helicopter parenting, fears for their safety, and the draw of screens means that they spend much less time than previous generations did going out with friends while unsupervised by an adult. You think, oh. I'm going to tell you something. I appreciate my parents When I was 16, dad went out and bought us. He went to Crossroads Ford and Carry, back to Crossroads again. And he bought a 1994 Ford Explorer, two-door sport, and this was in 95, so it was only 1 year old. Man, we thought we were the bomb.com. Let me tell you, we thought we were the coolest kids in the high school, didn't we, Megan? She was like, oh, there's the Watt idiots, and then she ended up marrying one. We drive up in our nice Explorer. We were like, yeah, we got it going on. It was four-wheel drive, Mike. My younger brother's the one that took it out and ruined the four-wheel drive by mudding in it, but we won't talk about that. We were too nice to it, my brother and I. Anyway, we got to drive that every day. It was awesome. And she gave us money for gas. We were kind of spoiled, maybe. But we also worked. We worked, let me tell you. But mom would say, you're going to drive the kids to school every day, and here's the gas for that. And if you want to go with your friends to Raleigh, you have to pay for that. If you run out of the $20 of gas. Now, $20 of gas back then go pretty good ways. 99 cents a gallon or whatever it was. So anyway, I remember days we would all load up our friends in the Explorer, as packed, we even threw some in the very, very back, which was illegal. Probably people would flip out today because there was no seat belts. And we would go tearing down I-40 and go to the mall in Cary, or go to the Crabtree Mall on Glenwood Avenue in Raleigh. And we'd go with our friends, and no adult was there. We didn't get into trouble. They had raised us right. We didn't go out and do sinful, crazy things. We just had a good time walking around with our friends, eating ice cream, whatever. And we'd go home. Just 16 years old. Boy, you do that today, some people might have a conniption. You sent them on. I know there's a lot of crazier stuff going on today, and we do have to be careful. But this is, it's a totally different. We've got to supervise every iota. There's something to be said for getting out there and learning things the hard way. We're so afraid they're going to fall and fail. Let them. Let them. They'll learn. You know how I learned? Well, I learned a couple things. I learned that if you speed down I-40, you get pulled over. Yeah, it's North Carolina State Troopers. They're real friendly and fun. Met many of them, and I learned the hard way because Dad didn't say, okay, I'll take care of it, son. No, it was, yeah, okay, now I have to pay for this and figure out how I'm going to pay for it. And then I remember I got in a car accident. I was telling Seth about it. I got in a car accident the first year I had my license. I was something I'd never learned from driver's ed. But it took an accident to teach me. I thought I had the right-of-way, and I didn't in the situation, and the guy hit my truck. My dad was so mad, I'm telling you, I thought I was just going to die. He was furious. So Seth, however mad I've been at you, multiply that by 100, that's how your grandpa was mad at me. So he was furious. You know what he made me do? He said, you wrecked it. It still drives. It looks terrible. He said, I'm not driving to work in that. He took my Explorer and made me drive that wrecked truck to work, to school, in front of all my friends, and then have to explain what happened. I had to learn things the hard way, didn't I? Yeah, I learned about a rule in the road, and I learned to drive a little better. Let me take care of that for you, sweetie. We need to grow up. We need to go through some hardship instead of having mommy and daddy do everything for us. This is what's going on in our... And there's what she concluded in her study, by the way. And pastor's been saying this for literally 8 years. And they finally caught on to your, they called you maybe and said, hey, what's your, yeah, I thought so. There we go. So I'm looking for your name to be cited in the works here. But here's what she concluded. 18-year-olds act like 15-year-olds used to do. 13-year-olds act like 10-year-olds. You know what 10-year-olds and 13-year-olds were doing in years ago? They were out working in the fields and whatever else they needed to do. They were, they were getting married at age 14 and 15 and having 12, 13 kids on a farm. Now, I know we don't live in those kind of days, but, I got to grow up and I got to be an adult, and I'm 13. The maturity level was way up here because they were having face-to-face interactions all the time. They weren't stuck by themselves with a screen. So they're growing up much more slowly than they used to. And the rise, of course, to me, part of the reason why she, at least, explained this is because of the rise of social media. Let's go through a few things here. She said there's two changes driving safetyism. Kids are growing up more slowly, like we just talked about, and then the rise in anxiety and depression because of social media and the smartphones. The social media have been the main factor in what the society calls this mental illness. They call it a mental illness, depression, or anxiety. And they're attributing, of course, we know spiritually there's other reasons, but I wanted to share a couple things here. Here's some things that she concluded. She said, Two activities are significant. Now, you got to understand research studies. When you do a correlation, you're trying to find out what factors correlate to this rise of depression. And they run all these statistics, and then kind of like what I had to do for my dissertation, there's things that are significantly correlated. Like the statistic, the probabilities are so high that you can assume it's going to be true. It may not always be true, but you can assume it's going to be true. So the p-values on these were a 0.05, a 5% probability that it would not happen, or a 95% probability that it would happen. Very significant is the word they use in statistics. So she said, these two activities that are significantly correlated with depression and other suicide-related outcomes, electronic device use and watching TV. Those were the two things that were significantly correlated to a rise in depression among young people. And then she said, there were five things that had inverse relationships. In other words, they did not get depressed or they did not get anxiety. Here's five things. Sports and other forms of exercise. Now, in other words, the kids on the surveys that had responded that they did sports or did these things did not have levels of depression. Now, listen to this list. It's interesting. Sports and other forms of exercise. Why? Because they're out there doing what? Interacting with people. There's a hardship put in front of you. You missed or you made a mistake and someone might laugh at you. You know what? I'm going to get sidetracked here. I get sick and tired of this softy mess. I get sick with the conference even that we play in our school. It's sickening. You can't celebrate after you win. People get mad. And they write letters to Pastor and me about how it just hurt our feelings. Grow up! You lost! Sure, you want to be a good sport. We teach sportsmanship. Don't be gloating in somebody's face. But just because we lost, we got to... intent versus impact. That hurt me. And I'm being bullied and I'm going to tell the president. Mean people. It curdles my blood a little bit. I just get so sick of it. And then those same people that complain about it, they do it worse. And I never say a word. You know why? Because our kids need to learn to deal with it. Deal with it. You lost. Let them enjoy the victory. They earned it. But we're softies. Anyway, I'm not going to get sidetracked on the sports. Pastor can give you thousands of examples from Yak out there. And I tell you, this whole thing about kids developing later, you ought to see some of the kids out there. You can tell which ones have been sitting in front of a tablet and which ones have been outside playing, even at 5 and 6 year old. Yeah, I can't. You're like, what is your problem? Run. I don't know how. Where's the tablet? I'm not trying to make fun of people, but I'm telling you, you can tell. You can tell. Those kids have sat in a room with a screen for hours a day and have not gone outside and played, haven't run out there with the dog, haven't climbed a tree and, hey, I can jump down 12 feet. Oops, I broke my leg. Well, you learned. You can tell. You see them with a bat. I'm 8 years old. Where's home? They're facing first base. They don't even know where to run. And it gets worse and worse as time has gone on. Sports and related activities. They get the second one. Attending religious services. Now, this woman's a liberal. But her study showed that kids that attended church didn't have depression. And in her mind, it's because, they're interacting with people. Yes, that's true. You know, one of the reasons we come and gather together is to fellowship with each other and to teach your young people to speak when someone speaks to you and to smile and shake their hand like a man. My dad, I told you this before, we had a guy at my church where I grew up, Edward F. Dean. The guy was from the Navy. He had retired from the Navy. The dude was huge. I mean, I thought he was like Hercules and the Incredible Hulk molded into one. I remember he did a big old chest. He used to go up in his attic and weightlift in the 100-degree heat just because he could sweat more and get stronger. The guy was just a mammoth of a man. Big old chest, big old burly guy. And he was the head of the deacons, and he always stood at the door and greeted everybody. And he'd stand there, and I remember being a little boy looking way up there at Goliath, you know. I loved him. He was a great man. And he would hold out his hand and say, "How you doing, Adam?" And I'd put my tiny little hand in there, And he'd go, ladies, and he'd say, now squeeze that boy. Come on, shake my hand. And I'd say, yes, sir. And we'd try as hard as we could. We knew when we got to church, we better grab that thing. And, you know, I can't stand that. I got Brian out there in the hallway this morning. We went to shake hands like this, and we missed. And I said, wait, whoa, we got to redo this. We ain't doing this little, ha. We get a nice firm shake there. I like that. Good firm handshake. Be a man. Coming around. I love that we, in Sunday school, we walk around and we greet each other. That's one of my enjoyable things about Sunday. I enjoy that. Shaking hands and looking at people and telling them, hi, how you doing? And I like seeing our kids going around and doing it. We're teaching them. Now, again, from her standpoint, it's we're teaching them to interact with people, yes. But there isn't a lot more about attending services that will prevent you from being depressed. Because you see, there's a, especially if you're going to a good church that teaches Christ, there's hope in Christ. We don't need to be depressed. There's hope. And so, anyway, sports and other forms of activity, attending religious services, reading books and other print media. There was a difference with those that were reading on a tablet and those that were reading a literal book. Can you believe that? The fourth one, in-person social interactions, that they were making their kids interact with people at different events and things. And then the last one, sorry kids, hate to break it to you, doing homework. Doing homework. Those were the five things that were significantly correlated to not being depressed. Why? Because you're teaching your child to do something that they don't want to do. Just because the kid doesn't want to do something doesn't mean you take it away from them. You're going to be full in your life of doing things you don't want to do. I'm going to be honest with you. I do not want to get up tomorrow and come to school. I'm just flat out honest with you. I want to take about a 3-week vacation somewhere far, far away where nobody knows where I am and just sleep for about 3 weeks. And then I might think about it. I'm just being honest. But I'm going to get up and I'm going to come to school. It says God told me this is what I has for. He has for me. I've got a job to do. I may not feel like it. I may have to go through that 10th cup of coffee or something, or maybe a whole pot, Grover. I don't know. But I'm going to, you know, hey, we got a job to do. There's going to be light. You're not going to want to get up at 4:30 one morning and go to work. But that's life. That's a job. I remember working for my dad, painting those houses, especially when I knew it was sanding day. I do not want to get up at 5 o'clock, drive that van and pick everybody up, fight the traffic going to Raleigh between Highway 70 and the Beltline was like two lanes of 90-mile-an-hour traffic, and you just move it or lose it, or you just get plowed and just sit there and pull up to the job, and you feel like you've worked for 10 hours and it's 7 in the morning, and you just get there. And you're just like, boy, that was killing me. And you get in there and you work for 12, 13, 14 hours. I remember the night Seth was born, or the day Seth was born. I was working in a house. My dad was doing a big 3-story house out near Fuquay Marina in Jasmine Park. And it was a huge house. The people were moving in the next day. We had all this touch up to do. And we were there. Dad said, we got to get it done today. I mean, we had tons of things on that punch list. And I remember Megan calling me at 8 p.m. I'd been on that house since 7 in the morning, me and the whole crew. 8 p.m., Megan calls me, I think something's happening. Well, babe, you're going to have to wait. That's literally what I said. I can't leave. I've got a crew of 4 guys. I have no other vehicle. And we've got these people moving in tomorrow. And finally, I made it home at, 11:30 at night. And we loaded up, went to the hospital. That's life. And then she had the baby at like 6 in the morning or something. That was a rough couple of days. I was like, where am I kind of thing. But I mean, my life was so much harder than what my wife went through, you know, so. No, I'm just kidding. But there's hardships. And you got to, that's life, work. You got to get out there and do things you don't want to do. Here's some homework. Not there isn't a kid in the world. I don't think that just is so, Mommy, I've got paper to do tomorrow. I'm so excited. It's like, yeah, I'm going to write my dissertation. I'm so excited to sit in front of a computer for hours. No, it's not something you want to do, but it's what God has before you. I tell the kids this all the time in school. The Lord has brought you to our school. The Lord led your parents to put you in this school. This is what God has for you today. Like it or not, it's what He has for you. And since God has it for me, I'm going to do it to the best of my ability. I'm going to do it to the glory of God, the best that I can. even though I may not want to do those things. Those type of things, what she calls anti-social media. In other words, having media, but not the social media. Reading a book, going to church, playing and having social activity on a ball field helps young people. And of course, these are all, again, purely secular things. They're not relating to spiritual things whatsoever. We know that spiritual things would, of course, help them so much. She said, kids who spend more time off of screens, if they're engaged in non-screen activities, are at a lower risk for depression and suicidal things. She said, devices take us away from people. Now you think about that. And when you live in a world where it's just you, and it's introverted, that's where the depression and the anxiety, because they don't know God. You mix that in there, of course. And this is where it happens. And then there's a whole floodgate of things that come along. Well, I made it to one slide. Yes. Tonight, I'm going to do two more slides, hopefully. So bear with me. I get pretty ramped up about some of this stuff. But this is where we are today. We've got to help our kids. We've got to teach them, of course, number one, spiritual things. But there's a whole world of practical things as well that we need to be teaching and sharing with them. Father, thank you so much for the time this morning to be with our service as well and help us to honor you as we sing, as we worship. And Lord, as we hear your word preached to us this morning, I pray these things in Christ's name. Amen. Thank you.